friends. As the first speaker pointed out, the subject of our lecture today is karma and heredity. These days we find a lot of emphasis being placed on heredity, genetics, genetic engineering, and as the first speaker pointed out, often we hear parents saying that this child has brown eyes just like her grandmother, or this particular child has the mathematical ability just like his great grandfather. It may even be ability for language or some sort of mechanical aptitude, but these are attributed to someone in the hereditary line. So heredity, as the first quotation points out, is the passing on of physical or mental characteristics genetically from one generation to another. Now, of course, they say you must distinguish between inheritance, which is inheritance of wealth and inheritance of property, where there is actual transfer objectively and physically from parents or grandparents or great grandparents or even some remote ancestor to you. But in biological heredity or inheritance, there is not actual transfer, there is a transfer or transmission of genetic constitution. So they speak about what is known as the genotype. Genotype is the genetic constitution which gives you the probability of the offspring having certain physical features or certain mental constitution. As against this, they talk about phenotype. And that phenotype actually indicates what that offspring will develop into. That is, actually, what will be his physical, mental, intellectual constitution. And that is how we see. In fact, phenotype, they say, is a result of interaction of the gene with his inner and external environment. We therefore see that not all the offsprings, even of the same parents, they display or exhibit same characteristics. In fact, not even two twins, they are alike. Not even monozygotic twins are alike, whether it is features or it is personal character traits. Now, we can see that the question then arises that what makes you you? And this has been answered differently by people of different streets. For instance, in the 2nd century AD, the physician, Greek physician, Galen, he based the explanation of 4 different kinds of personalities in terms of 4 humors in the body of man. So there is black bile, there is yellow bile, there is blood and phlegm. And depending upon the proportion or the balance or imbalance of these various kinds of humors in the body of man, you find the person to be having choleric temperament, melancholic temperament, phlegmatic temperament, or even sanguine, that is combative, warrior-like nature. Now, psychologists have their own classification of extrovert, introvert, cerebrotonic, viscerotonic, and so on. Similarly, we find science also classifying the personalities on the basis of genes. A few years back, Lesch gene was identified. It was shown to be directly connected with the neurotransmitter serotonin, and it was therefore claimed that this gene appears in 2 forms. One is a longer, the other is a shorter form. When the shorter version of the gene is present in one's constitution, one is likely to have deficiency of serotonin and therefore more prone to depression. Then there is another gene which is identified for variety seeking, creativity, and on and on. In fact, today we find hundreds of genes which have been identified, and there is what is called as gene mapping. So there is a gene for schizophrenia, there is a gene for breast cancer, there is a gene for creativity, there is a gene for variety of diseases, even gene for violent behavior and so on. So much so that just recently an article appeared in which it is said that if we can identify the genes especially which are connected with the diseases, then by doing something with these genes, we can prevent transmission of diseases from one generation to another. There are what we call as hereditary diseases. Now, one of the institutions in England has in fact encouraged research in this direction, and they are allowing gene editing to be carried out on the human embryo itself. Luckily, they say that they will not transplant this embryo in any woman's womb. But even so, it's like you edit an article and you identify wrong spelling, grammatically wrong sentence, or you may reframe the sentence, replace one word by another to make it more effective, and so on. In the same way, what they are trying out is gene editing, that is, either once they identify a gene for, say, Alzheimer's or schizophrenia or breast cancer, they would either modify it or they would replace that gene by another gene. This has caused concern on ethical grounds, and some of them are also saying that what to expect? Would we have maybe tomorrow Mahavira and Buddha, Jesus and Einstein, Mozart and Bach manufactured in laboratory? Because it also raises a concern that with this kind of gene editing, tomorrow we might have a superior race, a race of human beings superior to normal human beings. Another metaphysical question which is asked, that is it possible by merely changing the chemical and chemical constitution to bring about any effect in the consciousness of man? So merely changing the genetic constitution, can we bring about a much better concentration, a much better meditation? Not that, but more than that, in fact, can we, as it were, help people reach enlightenment by simply changing the constitution? And if so, then this reaching enlightenment, moksha, they will lose their value because they will be like market commodity. Just get your genetic constitution changed, maybe right from the beginning at birth, and you are bound to be a Buddha or a Jesus, someone sure to reach enlightenment or some such thing. Now, we find that similar to that, there is another concern raised. And that concern, as I think even the first speaker pointed out, is the concern about responsibility of our actions. Again, there was a whole article about, can your genes make you murder or kill? And in that article, they had pointed out the case of a murderer, a Dutch murderer, whose lineage was traced out, and in his family line, as it were, for generations, it was found that there were people in that line who were engaged in murdering, assaulting, raping, and therefore, no wonder that he is also a murderer. In another case, a serial killer was involved. Typically, the lawyers, instead of finding any other evidence, they tried to find out his genetic constitution. And it was found that in his genetic constitution was what they named as a warrior gene. Now, this gene is directly connected with an enzyme called MAOA. And this is the enzyme, again, directly connected with breaking down of the molecules of the neurotransmitters serotonin and dopamine. Both of them are mood regulators. And when this warrior gene is present, the ability of the enzyme MAOA is obstructed. That is, it cannot break down these molecules of serotonin and dopamine. As a result, it tends to collect in the brain of the person, and the result is that the person begins to be impulsive, he loses control over himself and becomes violent in his behavior. Psychoactive behavior is generally shown by such people. And the thing is that when this was proven by the lawyers, the jury in fact did not pronounce capital punishment. They gave him life imprisonment, but he was not really hanged. So, again the question arose. Lots of researchers who argued that gene for breast cancer, suppose you have one, it only shows that you are exposed to an increased risk for having a breast cancer. Our genes may influence our behavior, but our genes don't determine us. And that is something very important. Also, even in the previous years, several articles have appeared where they have tried to show this very thing, that as a human being grows, he has experiences. His environment keeps changing. And very much after the age of 20, 25, you feel and see people experiencing, learning from the experiences. And the result, therefore, is that it is these experiences and environment which can either silence the gene or it can activate the genes. Depending upon the kind of experiences you have, you may tend to activate a good or a bad gene, in the sense the gene connected with a good or a bad trait. But all in all, they say we must take into account the power of choice in human beings, and also we must take into account his environment. After all, we also say many times that a person is to a large extent determined by his environment. It all depends upon how much poverty he has gone through and experienced. What were his social and what was his social and political background? In fact, we try to see what kind of treatment he got during his childhood years. And there are many factors, of course, mainly talking about the external environment. And this debate, therefore, of nature versus nurture is a very, very old debate. In 1650, we've been told that John Locke was the first philosopher to say or speak about what they call as tabula rasa, that every newborn baby is like a blank slate. And then all growth depends upon the environment. We are shaped by our environment, depending upon to what kind of forces we are exposed to. Then a few years later, there was Francis Galton, who emphasized nurture. I mean, he emphasized nature. He said that what the child brings with itself in terms of genetic constitution, that is what really makes us what we are. So he put forward the idea of selective breeding, eliminating those which are likely to be weak mentally and physically, and the whole idea of eugenics, breeding a superior race of people, and so on. It was all a result of emphasis on nature. And so on, it just went on. Till finally, today, more or less, the position is that we are a mixture of nature and nurture. Now, we can see immediately, as the first speaker rightly pointed out, that if we try to say that it's all a matter of heredity and inheritance, then, as Mr. Judge also says in the article, is heredity a puzzle? He points out that if you are going to say that a murderer is a murderer because he is born in the family of murderers, a prostitute is a prostitute because she is born in a family of prostitutes, so in which case then you cannot hold that person responsible, and in that case we will have to enact new laws which will then make these people an exception, so that we have to say, no, you can't punish them because how can they cannot have help. They are not to be blamed because they are born in this family having those traits, etc. We see that therefore one thing, that major question will arise about responsibility of the people, the moral responsibility. But several other questions also arise when we only talk about heredity. The very first thing we can ask is, why only to those parents from whom he might inherit extremely good or extremely bad attributes and character traits? Why only those parents? Is it a chance? Randomness? Secondly, we also find that many times, like the case given of Blind Tom, a Negro boy born to Negro parents in America, who could play piano very well. He was an expert in playing piano, only even as a child. Now, where did he get this hereditary? Because the parents were illiterate farm workers, and in fact, piano being a new invention, they could not possibly have, even in the early part of life, seen or played piano. Then how did he get in hereditary this trait for playing piano, and that too so well? Secondly, on the other hand, we find case of Bach. Bach was a great musician, child prodigy in fact. But in his family line, it was found that gradually this musical ability was decreasing, and finally in two or three generations, the musical ability completely disappeared. No one in that line really displayed this musical ability. To answer these questions, therefore, we really need to find that heredity cannot be considered as the cause. Heredity at best can be regarded as a sort of an instrument, a sort of a means or a vehicle through which causes are finding expression. That is why in the second quotation, Mr. Judge says, heredity has been looked at or is beginning to be as the cause of crime and of virtue. It is not a cause, but only the means or instrument for the production of the effect, the cause being hidden deeper. And interestingly, out of so many, you have this particular Dr. Stephen Rose, who is doing a lot of research in brain and behavior. He is saying the same thing, that yes, you have been, as it were, finding out new genes and then mapping them, correlating them with the diseases. All right, you can catalog all possible genes, but at the end of it, probably it will help you to find cure, drugs, better drugs for those diseases, but you will never succeed in knowing the cause for that disease, for that behavior. So here he says, in 100 years from now or sooner, today's attempts to locate causes in terms of genes will seem misguided. I'm still not sure whether you would want to argue that once you have cataloged all your genes of small effect, you would say you have explained the causes of schizophrenia. The phenotypic effect of any one of your genes will be probabilistic. It may be that your techniques will point to new drug prospects, but I fear that explanation will still elude simple reductionism. So then we come to theosophical proposition that the cause, the causal aspect can be understood in terms of karma, and genes being only the medium or the instrument through which you see these causes expressing themselves. So again, this Vidyat says, karma and reincarnation include the premise that the man is a spiritual entity who is using the body for some purpose. Man being spiritual entity is a very important thing for us to accept and understand. So man is not just his body but something more, and there is something permanent called the divine ego, soul, and we. Therefore, the very first explanation we need to get, which is the question we raised, that why is it that you are born to these parents and this family and nowhere else? As to that, we are given again the explanation that in taking birth, the ego follows the line of least resistance. That is to say, in other words, ego takes birth in that family where it finds the environment conducive for the expression of the nature which it brings with itself. Now, to understand this, we must get into a little bit of the technicality. When we die, theosophy says that the ego goes to Devahan, but there is the astral body with all the lower thoughts and desires impressed upon it. This is what we call as ghost, and it undergoes disintegration for a longer or shorter time depending upon whether a person was materialistic, wicked, or good and not very materialistic. Once this astral body disintegrates, it leaves behind what is known as skandhas by the Buddhists and sanskaras by the Hindus. These skandhas are simply translated as attributes. They are the tendencies, and we will not go into much details, but the key to theosophy, quoting from the Buddhist source, HPP says there are five kinds of skandhas. There are rupa skandha. These are the attributes which will determine what kind of a body that we will have in coming incarnations. There are abstract qualities of mind, mathematical ability, musical ability. Then there are skandhas called vedana, sensation. This will determine our likes and dislikes, our desires, our preferences. Similarly, there are vijnana skandha, higher mental powers, and so on. Now we can see that these skandhas we've been accumulating from life to life, and HPP calls them as karmic germs. And when the ego, which has gone to Devahan, has completed its stay in Devahan, which is basically the state of complete peace and bliss, but also it is a state where there is digestion and assimilation of our experiences on earth. When that process is completed, the ego is ready to take next birth. It is said that these skandhas, which we have created through our thoughts, through our desires, through our actions, these skandhas, they remain, as it were, waiting at the threshold of Devahan, keeping a magnetic link with the ego, and they attach themselves to ego, as it were, like barnacles to ship. And it is from among these skandhas which were created in various lives that the ego will make a choice of a few skandhas, and depending upon the skandhas chosen, the birth will be determined. That is, what kind of physical constitution, what kind of mental constitution, what kind of emotional constitution, what kind of moral constitution. All these tendencies we've been accumulating from the past lives, and a few of that we will pick up. And this is a choice which is made by the ego. And when we say it follows the law of least resistance, it means if supposing in a particular life, the ego has to take the experience of, as it were, inhabiting the deformed body, then, as Mr. Judge has given the example, that in some life, a person has persistently ridiculed, persecuted a deformed man. Because of this, the picture of the deformed man will be impressed, will make an image in the divine mind of that man who has been persecuted. In other words, the ego will carry the image. But it will have to wait. It will have to wait till it gets a family line where acquiring of such a body is possible. In other words, the heredity of that family allows the ego, which has created such karma for getting a deformed body, to get that deformed body. And then, through the agency of mother, as Mr. Jad says, through electrical and magnetic osmosis, the image which is carried by the ego, it repurposes on the fetus, that is the astral body which is developing in the mother's womb, and it gets deformed shape. Then on the deformed shape, physical particles deposit, and even the physical body which is formed is also deformed. So this way, the ego will try to see which is the family line which best answers to the nature that is carried based on the past karmas. Now, another criterion that is taken into account in choosing particular parents, family line, is that affinity which was created. It is said that amongst the strongest affinity are found parents. We create affinity through love and through hatred. We excessively and intensely hate people. Their very sight, we feel a sort of a shrinking feeling. Or we have this attachment which is also intense. In either of these cases, chances are that we would be thrown into this relation of mother-child in some life amongst the strongest affinity are found parents. And thirdly, it could be that the ego chooses to take birth in given family line and to given parents in order to reap the reward of good which was done collectively by all these people who belong to the same family, or to reap punishment for some action which was done collectively by them. This seems to be two or three main reasons how the ego will choose. The idea is, we should not blame heredity, we should not blame parents, we should not blame environment, because it is the ego itself which makes the choice of taking birth in that environment and taking birth in that very hereditary line. That is what the parents are going to give to him. Now, again we see that from this it becomes very clear. First of all, we are able to understand the case of both Bach and Mozart. In case of Mozart, we could see how musical brain, musical body, that is what he got from his parents and went on to become a great musician. The same is true of Bach. But we also say that how is it that others in the family were not so, and also later in his family line there were no musicians? The reason is the ego bringing that musical ability. No egos with musical ability took birth in that family line. In other words, as Mr. Jack says, that if the ego doesn't carry that characteristic, heredity is set at naught. Heredity is useless, though hereditarily there might be something or the other, but if the ego doesn't bring with it that characteristic, then there is no question of that trait getting expressed. And therefore, we find the musical ability dying down. All this is explained by Mr. Judge by saying that, therefore, we can see that basically it is all a matter of recollection. Ego remembering things from its past lives. It is the matter of remembering the knowledge which is brought from the past. And this recollection can be divided into physical as well as mental memory. Take for instance the case of a dancer. Yes, there is a mental memory of, as it were, remembering all the nitty-gritty and intricacies of dancing. But there is also physical memory. How is it that very quickly the steps are picked up by this person as compared to another who might rehearse it for 50 times and still not get it correctly? Because the very body cells have retained the memory of something which was done in the past, and therefore now that memory is brought back. Of course, genes help in bringing back that knowledge, in transmission of that trait. In some way, they help in this process. But primarily, it is this knowledge which has to come. And so you can explain the child prodigies and geniuses and so on. This is very well summed up, in fact, by Mr. Judge in The Ocean of Philosophy, where he says heredity in giving us a body in any family provides the appropriate environment for the ego. The ego goes only into the family which either completely answers to its whole nature or which gives an opportunity for the working out of its evolution and which is also connected with it by reason of past incarnations or causes mutually set up. The limitations imposed on the ego by any family heredity are exact consequences of the ego's prior lives. Transmission of trait and tendency by means of parent and body is exactly the mode selected by nature for providing the incarnating ego with a proper tenement in which to carry on its work. Now, very closely related to this concept of heredity is that of atavism. That is, it is said that you can get a particular character trait not from your parent or grandparents but right up to the seventh generation backwards. So, this is what we call as atavism as it is described, defined. It is the tendency to revert to ancestral type, wherein there is reappearance of traits which had disappeared generations before. Now firstly, we find the law of atavism being applied by the Darwinians, who say that we have descended from animals. And no wonder, one of the arguments which Darwinians present is this rudimentary organs which are found in some of the children that are born. Some children are born with a vestigial tail, with caudal appendage, with gill clefts, and around more than 15 such things have been identified. What they say is that man has descended from apes or animals, and therefore, by law of atavism, these are the things, characters, features, which reappear suddenly after several generations in human beings. So it is atavism which can explain. Theosophy says the explanation is just the other way around. Theosophy, in fact, says that animal has got its bodies from man. That to begin with, nature was more concerned with developing a perfect human form as we see it today. And there was a lot of experiment or trial and errors, shall we say, was going on. Form after form was assumed by humans. And it was discarded. That time human beings were still astral. These were discarded. These are called as basic types, original types. And these astral forms which were discarded were not really, it has not gone into waste, because nature used these astral forms discarded by human beings in forming the animal forms. No wonder, therefore, human beings have all those forms, have undergone all those forms which we do see in animals. There is not a feature in the animal organism which man does not potentially contain. That is what Secret Doctrine tells us. And therefore, having ourselves gone through these variety of forms, it's easy to see that now, after several generations and billions of years, sometimes it reappears. But it is not as if we have come from animals. That is just by the way. Likewise, HPP says that the Indo-Europeans, they were at least 9 to 10 feet tall right in the beginning when these races had come into existence. And today we find that law of atavism explains why suddenly you have a human being 7 to 7.5 feet tall. This is reappearance of that. That tallness, which was a kind of very natural feature for people at that time. However, certain things have a very, very occult kind of explanation. Every time we are not able to explain it on the basis of heredity or even on the basis of what is called as atavism. So, for instance, why are black children born to white parents or white children born to black parents? Indians settling in Germany, many of them had their children with Germanic faces, and on and on. The explanation comes in terms of what is described by HPB as thanatological phenomena. And she says that mother, a pregnant woman, is very susceptible and sensitive to astral light. Now, astral light in theosophy is that register on which every thought, every picture, every image, every feeling has been impressed. So, if the mother has been very strongly impressed by a certain person or a face, probably it can be a face which she sees almost every day in front of her, then that image from her will go out and impress itself in the astral light, and then through the astral currents which are constantly flowing from astral light towards her, and from her own body there are going out magnetic exhalations or emanations, these two things meet, and in the process that image which she has impressed because of her, because she was intensely impressed by it, that image will be taken by these currents. They will repercuss and work on the astral model of the child which is forming in her womb, and that child will have the same features. It may be just the mother-in-law that she keeps seeing every day and maybe has a kind of a intense liking or any such thing. Photograph of some person, photograph of a very healthy baby, and wants that my baby should be like this, then she would find the baby having the features. And therefore, as HPB says, that many times very virtuous women also were doubted that how is it that the baby is not looking like either husband or wife, but some other person. But this is the idea. It's the imagination of mother which tends to mold the features of child by the impressing of that picture or an image. Come to think of it, this is also true in animals. It is the instance which I don't recollect very well, but HPB has mentioned about a female pigeon who used to always get scared of a wild parrot. I think used to bother her quite a lot. And therefore, quite unknowingly, I'm unconsciously the image was very, very strongly impressed in that mother pigeon. She had laid eggs which were kept far away. But this intense image which was formed of this wild parrot somehow went and affected the chicken that were the babies which were growing and developing within the egg. And finally, when these babies were born, some of them were actually born with the head of the parrot and some of their feathers were also green in color. Now, we recently had an instance where the farmer wondered how the goat had given birth to a baby goat with a human face. Now, the first thing that comes to the mind or came to his mind was that, was she violated? That is, was there an unnatural union between a man and a goat? But that theosophy says is not possible, because now nature has, as it were, put a barrier. So such unions are no longer fruitful. The only other explanation we can think of is that probably even here, mother's imagination was taken in by some human figure, some human face. And that is how the face of the goat was that of human, of course. No, yet absolutely no conclusion has come. There is research going on in that direction. But these are therefore very occult explanations, and HPB goes to the extent of saying that the Kabbalistic use of the pentagram can therefore determine the countenance of unborn infants, and an initiated woman might give to her son the features of Nereus or Achilles as well as those of Louis XV or Napoleon. And we can understand that it is not without reason that today we put a lot of emphasis on what is called as Garbha Sanskar. What is thought by the mother, what is seen by mother, it affects the child. And so, if I am not mistaken, in Rome, the mothers were made to see the statues of warriors and heroes so that the child would also get that physique and also probably get those characteristics if she dwells on such warriors. Now, all in all, however, theosophy says that how these traits are transmitted from parents to children, as well as many complex things about embryology, they are still a puzzle for a scientist. So in the next paragraph we are told that Wiseman, who is a German embryologist cum philosopher, believed that it was one infinitesimal cell out of millions of cells at work in the formation of an organism which determined alone and unaided, by means of constant segmentation and multiplication, the correct image of the feature of the future man. Those germinal cells do not have their genesis at all in the body of the individual, but proceed directly from the ancestral germinal cell, passed from father to son through long generation. So, they may talk about chromosomes and genes, but occult philosophy agrees completely with Wiseman, who very intuitively thought that there must be a particular kind of cell which we call as a germinal sphere with a germinal plasm. And this germinal cell does not originate in human body, but it comes from or is transmitted from father to son, and then to his son and his son. It is this germinal cell which is instrumental in passing on the character traits. But it is not the germinal cell which is doing it all alone. There is a potency, a force which is locked up there. And this is something which is described as spiritual plasm. In the next paragraph we are told, it is the spiritual potency in this physical cell that guides the development of the embryo and which is the cause of the hereditary transmission of the faculties and all the inherent qualities in man. This inner cell of the physical cell, that is the spiritual plasm, which might well be called a spiritual potency in the ego itself, that dominates the germinal plasm, and that is the key to the explanation of heredity, etc., etc. So this is what, again, there are two things at work, the germinal cell, and behind germinal cell, more or less, is the spiritual force, spiritual plasm, which, as we saw, originates in the very ego itself. If the ego doesn't have it, it cannot be passed on. And we also therefore see that sometimes, well, the researchers, the scientists, they almost play at being gods. A lot of genetic modification, genetically engineered babies, genetically engineered crops, all these things are there. But one of the things that is noticed is that you might have a tomato, which is perhaps as big as a melon, but, and maybe very beautiful, very red in color, very juicy, having a lot of pulp, but where is the taste? So, it is at the cost of taste that other features are developed well. The same thing about flowers. You may have a huge red rose, excellent in beauty, far more number of petals, but at the cost of fragrance. They are beautiful, but almost no fragrance or very little fragrance. This shows that there is something which is lacking in the human endeavor to bring about changes, modifications, better varieties, which is already present, a spiritual factor which is present naturally. Now, we are also told that when we talk about human heredity, it's very different from, say, animal or plant heredity. It's easy to see that a dove will be dove-like, and therefore, the offsprings of doves, though of course they are a little different here and there, but more or less they are very, very similar. Nature remains similar. Appearance remains almost identical. Similarly, tiger always will remain tiger-like, but we don't say that about man. Man can be dove-like or he can be like a tiger. In other words, man has got free will and a choice. And because of this free will and a choice which is there, human heredity becomes an extremely complex process. Here it is said that human heredity is enormously complicated by the fact that man is a continuing, self-conscious entity responsible for his choices. In case of human incarnations, heredity is subservient to individual and racial karma. So, what we will be like, what we will look like, what will be our mental and moral constitution, it's a constantly changing thing. And we can see, otherwise karma would be fatalism. That, as was pointed out, Gandhiji's son would be Gandhiji and Hitler's son would be Hitler, but that is not so. Even if there are good parents, to them vicious children can take birth. And even if parents are vicious, good children like Prahlad can take birth to parents like Hiranyakashipu. And maybe they are robbers and murderers to begin with, but they can change later in life. So it's a very, very complex thing. The thing to remember is that the most important thing is karma. Heredity is only subservient. So somewhere it is said that atavism and karma. Heredity is handmaiden to karma and heredity and atavism are handmaidens to karma and reincarnation.